It's the first full week of the new year. It is time to conquer your weight problem. It is time to conquer clutter. It's time to clunker. It's time to conquer disorganization. And in the list of all the things you need to conquer, need to get over, it's fear. That's right. What are you afraid of? We have talked about that here on the program before in the last few months. Miriam Neff was with us talking about that. And then I got an email from someone who said, would you write an article about this fear thing? What is holding you back from doing the thing that you know you need to do? The thing that you actually want to do? I talked with somebody, this was a couple of years ago, and it was about a job. And the fear was, if I get a full-time job, I won't get the benefits that I have right now. And so I'm afraid, and if I... What are the fears that you have? Have you conquered any lately? Is it on your to-do list, goal of yours in 2015 to put a fear that you have of something behind you? Today on Chris Fabry Live, a friend of mine tells her reaction when she tried to conquer fear and things didn't work out like she really wanted. Straight ahead on this edition of Chris Fabry Live, I have some thoughts, some experiences here as well. Nate McMillan is our producer, Trisha McMillan, coordinating producer, Ryan McConaughey is making me sound better than I deserve, and Gabby T is answering your calls at 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675, online, chrisfabrylive.org, where you'll see more about our special guest here today, who is a certified health coach and lifestyle athlete. I have no idea what that is. Her primary focus is on mindset transformations, believing that when you change how you think, the healthy change in nutrition, active lifestyle, and healthy physique will follow. She's also a musician. She is a former fellow employee of Moody Radio. We worked together many, many moons ago, and she started a new website not long ago called I Quit Fear. Her name is Donna Stafford. I knew her from her maiden name. But Donna Stafford, welcome to the program. How are you today in Oregon?
Thank you, Chris. I'm doing good. And I think you've had many more moons than I have. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, you would have to remind me of that. Yes, of course. All right, so you put this blog up yesterday, and it had a microphone, and I see all of these things of you playing and singing at your church and doing these things. But you were playing, where was the venue? What were you doing with your guitar and the group there?
You know, I have been on both the tech and then also music worship teams at our church in Boring, Oregon, which we get a lot of laughs about, but that is true.
You do? You really live in Boring, huh?
I don't live there. I at least have that. I don't live there, but I do attend church in Boring, so that opens up, you know, all kinds of jokes. And I have played acoustic guitar on the music team there for probably about 10 years. And I hate to sometimes admit how long I've been playing guitar completely, because I think we all have that thought, like, oh, now once I admit it's been 20-plus years, I should probably be further along in my skill and ability than I am. But been playing for a long time. And definitely love it and love being involved.
Yes. All right. So here's the song that she was getting ready to play. And had you decided you were going to do the introduction, or had somebody else asked you to do that?
You know, it's kind of funny. The teams are scheduled, and I was scheduled for this particular weekend, and I don't know if the song, you know, what was chosen first, me or the song, you know, and we had a guy that was scheduled to sing the lead, and so I had been talking with another one of the musicians, it was a favorite song of his, so it was a week before, and he said, you know, we're on together next weekend, he's playing bass, I'm playing acoustic, and he's like, you better get on that and learn that lead part, and I kind of hesitated, because my forte really is strong rhythm guitar, so I kind of stand and sing and play and do my thing, and it's a comfort zone for me for sure. And so it piqued my interest when he brought up this song. I thought, you know, this may be a good challenge for me. Not sure if I can do it, but I'll definitely listen, give it a try, because, you know, that's not going to hurt anything. So it's, and I'm afraid, do you have it ready to
yeah, I do. I do have it ready. Yeah. Because, and after I read your blog, I went to the YouTube and I saw all of these people who showed you how to play it. Did you do that too?
Well, I did take YouTube lessons, which I think has become very common. And yes. So you kind of have to weed through those who are giving good instruction compared to some who are maybe making it more complicated or giving bad advice. But that is how I worked my way through it. And I got to about, you know, I put a good afternoon's worth of work into it, and it started coming together. And I thought, you know, I was tentative as to whether or not I'd even try it. Because if I don't feel that I can be confident in doing something, I think, you know, I may hand it off to somebody else because I don't want to be that distraction.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, right, because it's
we're
a worship
to
thing.
Yeah. We're trying exactly. to communicate something here. I don't want to be that guy. So I started feeling confident enough with it that I thought, you know, I'm going to give this another couple of days of coming back to it and making sure that I can make the transitions solid and the hammer-ons and the notes are clear and confident and that it's going to be solid, also knowing that it was going to be like a cold start. It was the last song we were doing at a long set. I think we did 8 songs. So you're already kind of worn out from probably over-practicing, coming in early on Saturday afternoon to practice, and then doing that first service on
Saturday
evening.
Now you're explaining. Now you're explaining it all away. You know, I was tired, and we've been practicing. Okay, so here is the need to this is the Need to Breathe song. I want you to hear. It's got an 8-second introduction, but I want you to hear Multiplied and a little bit of the song. This is how it's supposed, this is how Donna wanted to play it right here.
Your love is like radiant diamonds bursting inside of. Cannot contain.
So that's what it's supposed to start like. That is this, it takes you in there. It's just got the guitar. It sounds so good. It's the lilting voice of the guy leading it, and you could just hear it all coming together. Donna, what happened?
Isn't it beautiful? It was beautiful. So, we've got a 30-second transition from the previous song, which is this On You Stay, which is this the congregation is building with this gorgeous song that happens right in front of it, and then this moment of, okay, I normally stand and play, so I needed this transition time to pull forward my chair, kind of get everything situated with this complicated picking pattern and the speed, you know, the mere speed of the whole thing needed to happen for it to be done correctly. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to do, no hesitation, I'm going to do a tight transition from when the guy leading finishes what he's saying. And so I was really proud of myself in that effort because I hit that first note and was in the right key and started in on a picking pattern and got about 3 strings into it, I want to say, at which point I realized that's not the right pattern. You know, looking back on it, there's some other maybe techniques that I could have deployed to end up better than where I did. But I kind of looked down at a guy behind me and shook my head, and he looks at me and he smiles and nods and he's like, "It's okay." And I'm like, "Yeah, no, it's not okay. I can't remember how it goes. I can't remember." So then I look over, I look to my right at the guy who's leading, and I look at him with, you know, this look of fear in my eyes, like I'm drawing a total blank. You gotta help me out here. And he looks at me and nods and smiles. And then I look at the guy who's, you know, waiting to start singing the song, because we're all in silence here at this point. I'm not still searching for the strumming pattern. This is just nothing happening. So this is increasing in awkwardness as the hundreds of people waiting, like, please somebody just do something. So I look at the vocalist, and he starts kind of like mouthing some sort of pattern to like help me tap into it, or I don't know. And I was like, yeah, that's not helping. And then I finally think, okay, wait, there's another guitar player behind me. So I turn and look at him like, dude, I mean, I think at that point I'm speaking up like, you got to start this because it's not going to happen. So he does. He kind of, it threw him, you know, and he wasn't really prepared to do it. I was capoed. I had my guitar set differently than he did, so he really had to rise to the occasion to save me from that moment. The song started, I kind of had my head down in my guitar thinking, okay, maybe I can pull off some kind of, you know, save some dignity by pulling into the picking pattern over what he is doing, but that never really happened. So I'm sort of like mindlessly running my fingers up and down the fretboard, dying. And then at which point I realized we get a little bit into the song and I thought, oh, I'm singing harmony on this as well. So, now what do I do? Because I had not made eye contact prior to that point. So I'm wearing this bracelet that I looked down. I'd put on that morning thinking, I was pretty excited to put it on because I love what it says. It has the inscription, I quit fear, on that bracelet. And it's something that I like to put on every day for that constant reminder. And so in that, the kind of my head down in shame position, I see that. I quit fear. And I thought, Donna, I'm pretty sure now you know what you need to do. I just had a major fail, but, you know, I got two choices. I can just continue looking down and just wait for this to be over and get off the stage as fast as possible. Or when that moment comes where it's time to sing, I can lift my head up and smile and put everybody at ease as much as possible and do what I was here to do in the best way that I can at this point. So that is what I did, and from what I hear, the singing part came off okay.
Well, I love this quote in the blog, and we've linked to it at chrisfabrylive.org. The sign of a true professional isn't that you never make a mistake. It's what you do when the mistake happens. And that is so true.
I didn't coin that, but that me and all my infinite wisdom, you know, as I'm mentoring younger musicians or those that are kind of left not as far along in their journey, because I've had years of experience and stress on stage and all these things, I love to give them that little piece of wisdom. It's not, you know, yes. It mistakes are going to happen. The sign of a true professional is what you do in those moments. Now, not realizing, of course, that I, in my not-too-distant future, I was going to be experiencing that, which has never happened to me in quite that way. I've seen it happen to other people.
Right. And you've always it's been the cringe system, you know, you can't, oh, I'm glad that's not me, or what would I do when that happens? Well, what do you do when it happens? And what about the fear that will keep you back, that will hold you back from even trying? You know, there are many people who are feeling that right now. I want to talk about that with you today on Chris Fabry Live.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
Galatians 5, verse 16. I'm going to read through the end of the chapter. "So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. They are in conflict with each other." Now, one reason, y'all, it is so important that you and I figure this thing out is because this is where it becomes so personally fulfilling to walk with Christ. That we begin to lose our taste for the old, for the sinful passions. We begin to develop a new passion, a holy passion. So it doesn't become the life of the big N-O. So this is important. It says in 19, I want you to hear that there really are, even in living in the Spirit, there are just no's. "The acts of the sinful nature are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions and envy, drunkenness, orgies and the like." So he's saying right there, you'll know those are the things of the flesh. He said, "I'll give you some examples. Those are some no's. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law. Those who belong to Christ have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit."
You've been listening to A Quick Word with Beth Moore. Beth invites you to join her weekly online lessons by going to bethmoore.org and clicking on the online lessons banner. That's bethmoore.org. Thanks for listening to A Quick Word with Beth Moore.
Your love is like radiant diamonds bursting inside us. We cannot contain. Your love will surely come find us like blazing wildfire, singing your name. Sweet love of mine, I have surrendered to your design. May this offering stretch across the skies. Peace, hallelujah, be multiplied.
This is Chris Fabry live on Moody Radio, and we can get so caught up in the mistake that was made and in the fear that we forget what the song was talking about. And that is a great message there about letting the praise of God be multiplied in our lives through his design. And you and I were designed, well, the design has been marred, of course, by sin, but we make mistakes and we falter and we fail and we hold back from doing that which we were created to do because we're not perfect and we want to be. And God has ordained praise not from perfection, but the mar, you know, from the mouths of infants and babes. And I wanted to talk a little bit about fear. Donna Stafford is joining us today. She made this mistake when she was trying to, she forgot that there was this silence there and this very uncomfortable feeling. And yet there is beauty in the discomfort. So you have this website, I Quit Fear. I wrote a little piece on there for you about writing and how you can give in to the fear and hold back from saying the thing that you feel like God has really put on your heart. Go ahead and lead us now into bring this all together. Why does fear hold so many people back?
You know, I am a health coach and I've been doing that for almost 5 years now. And that puts me in a wonderful position of being able to connect with a lot of people in a struggle related to their health. But in years into it, in having these in-depth conversations with people that I get to know through their health journey, what I started realizing over time, and this was true for me as well, is that every time somebody is stuck in the struggle, it's never because, the real reason is never because a diet doesn't work or, you know, we tend to make jokes about quitting and starting over again in the new year with these resolutions to lose weight and get healthy. So there are outcomes of reasons that we don't succeed when we set goals. But the thing that it always kept coming back to was I would hear people say, you know what, Donna, you know what I'm really afraid of. And it's when I realized that for myself and in conversations with friends and family and my clients, it's and I settled on that phrase of how fear has such a stronghold on our lives and this concept of quitting fear or I quit fear, I started to hear it more and more. It's kind of like, hey, you buy that yellow car, you're driving the yellow car, you start seeing yellow cars everywhere. And it's the same idea with the fear that holds us back in every area of our lives. So for me, I may be working with people specifically in their health, but as they start to dig deep and figure out what it is that they're afraid of that is stopping them from finally, you know, not only setting the goal, but pushing to it and past it, you know, they're able to see some success in those areas, and it floods into every other area of life. So for me, that might have happened 5 years ago in my own healthy journey where I picked one thing. You know, I told people it's easy to suddenly get overwhelmed by everything I might be afraid of and start, you know, finger pointing at what all these things might be, but pick one thing and say, you know, right now in my life, I am going to do this without a foundation of fear, because up until now, the foundation and my motivation has been fear-based. So what if I pick this one thing and truly see change through to its end in this area because I'm thinking differently or I'm defying that fear.
Yes. This leaks over into the spiritual life so much as well, because there are a lot of people who they have it as their goal to share their faith and to reach out to other people, you know, and fear holds them back because, well, what are they going to think about me? Or what if they ask me a question that I don't know and I don't understand? And all those things start happening, right?
Yeah, it you start to realize when you're checking out fear in your life, when you're figuring this out, it is impossible to separate the two. I mean, it really becomes impossible to separate, you know, it's my health, it's my finances, it's relationships, but it immediately, I mean, you cannot get away from the fact that it's a spiritual matter. And of course it's going to flood into those areas. So what's cool is that God's given us this ability to take action steps in our lives in different compartments for sure. But the biggest amazing transformation that comes through that is I really do believe it transforms you spiritually. And, you know, sometimes those are small action steps. One thing, you know, sometimes, some days we just struggle. You know, some days I put my I Quit Fear bracelet on and I'm ready to go, like nothing can stop me. And other days it's just, you know, whatever happens circumstantially and I need to go out of the house and I'm thinking I'm going to interact with people. Some days it's a struggle to just look up and make eye contact with somebody. And sharing your faith on that day may be as much as being willing to push past whatever the negative emotions that you're having and, hey, I'm just having a bad day, kind of leave me alone. But that might be the only time that person ever sees a smile from you if you're willing to make that eye contact and give that to them. And so sometimes the steps are that little. And sometimes, yeah, it's like shaky, challenging. You know, you're shaking as you're sharing your faith. And, you know, being afraid, like what you said, I'm not going to remember this. What if this isn't theologically sound or I can't remember scripture references, you know? I think those things scare a lot of us, myself included.
Yeah. And fear, you know what fear will do? It'll cause you to focus only on you. It'll cause you to look at yourself so closely that you can't see the big picture. And the beauty in this story that you've told us about the guitar is that at the end of the blog, you say the beauty of your story comes through the trying and the failing and the trying again, and that's all part of the process of quitting fear. You are humble enough to say, I don't know how this is going to turn out, and in one sense, it doesn't matter how it turns out because I'm going to be all here while I'm doing whatever this thing is that I'm doing, you know, playing the song or sharing your faith or doing whatever it is. That's part of the process and part of the beauty.
Yeah. You know, I had the fact that I had this major stage fail, I don't wish that on anybody. An accomplished musician, you want your passions to show. You want to perform well. You know, I think sometimes church music gets a bad rap. And so for me, in my lack of humility, I don't want to be that person that like feeds into that stereotype. I want this to be quality. You know, so I'm fighting myself and selfish reasons all along the way. But in having this failure, what it opened me up for is the amazing love and support from the team there. There's another part to this story too that I didn't share with you that you don't know, and that is that happened to me in a Saturday night service, and I was rattled, but I had to get up Sunday morning and do this again two times. So I that failure was, you know, sometimes it's good for us to experience that pain. I read something today where a gal was sharing, you know, I dare you actually to try and fail. Because you never will get to that point of pushing toward your goal if you don't assume that position of failure. So to just live your life in fear of it, and I've heard that through many conversations of, you know, health, yes, but in the other areas of our life, what if I fail? Okay, so we all do.
So what?
you know, with that in music, you know, I got up the next morning, and again, I had that bracelet on. My husband said when we came home, he's like, you know, don't back out. Because I could have said, sure, too shaken, I can't do it, I want this to be good. And I kind of held that bracelet up, that I quit fear, and I said, I can't, I have to try it again.
Good for you.
So,
how did it turn out?
No.
It went okay?
You know, I wish I could tell you it was flawless. It was a bit shaky, because again, I had to work my way through it, but I did it. I didn't forget the part. So we worked through it, and I had an amazing team of musicians there surrounding and supporting and loving me. So that part was all good. And I think I was telling somebody else last night, you know, had that failure never happened, it's, you know, that again gives, it enriches me as a person. It gives me something to share with other people. You know, no one's walking around here trying to do it perfectly all the time. I mean, there's no that arduous, painful, gorgeous, beautiful process of working through your fears. It's like, it's going to be all of that. Like, it's going to be dirty and ugly and scary sometimes.
Yes, yes. Well, and you know what? If you hadn't had that happen, you wouldn't have been here today, right?
Absolutely not.
So. No, I knew we were going to talk again, Donna, and you keep playing, you keep coaching, you keep doing what you're doing. It sounds like God is using you in good ways.
And, you know, just one last thing, too. I want to encourage people. We have this community at I Quit Fear, the website, iquitfear.com, but also an active community on Facebook. Just look up I Quit Fear. And that is that we don't have a community, we don't have stories, we can't support and encourage each other if we don't have the people sharing their stories. So I just want to encourage you to check that out, I Quit Fear on Facebook, and we're on all the social media stuff. So my story is one, and you know, sometimes I look at my stories and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, forgetting a part on stage, big deal, compared to some of the things that other people are sharing. It's that we've got amazing stories there, and I know that there's many more to come, because it'll, you know, I challenge you to think about what the fears are. For some people, you might think, well, my stuff's little, you know, it's a conversation I've been avoiding, it's, you know, making changes in my health, or maybe I'm trying to run a mile when it's been 10 years since I've, like, did anything faster than a walk to the refrigerator. But for
well, you know what,
others,
I'm going to tell a story when we come back about my, and I've been thinking about writing about this, but it's about something in the backyard. I'll tell you that story, and I want to hear from you. What about you? How do you respond? 877-548-3675.
Knowing God from Harvest America with Pastor and Evangelist Greg Laurie.
Every one of us is running away from death. We're just a step away. You never know when it could happen. People spend all this money trying to turn back the hands of time. $13 billion worth of anti-aging cosmetics are sold annually. And then there are those people that go out and get plastic surgery. And I'm not knocking it. I'm sure some of you, how many of you have had? No, I don't. I bet, you know, whatever. I don't, you know, hey, my feeling is, you know, if the tent's wrinkled, I guess stretch it. If the house needs painting, paint it, whatever you want to do. But I just got to tell you, sometimes it's kind of scary what happens. You look at some people and you're like, did you actually want your face to look like that? Death is no respecter of persons. Doesn't matter if you're a movie star or a pop star. Everyone has to face it. The king of rock, Elvis Presley, is dead. The king of soul, James Brown, is dead. The king of grunge, Kurt Cobain, is dead. The king of pop, Michael Jackson, is dead. But the king of kings and the lord of lords, Jesus Christ, is alive forevermore. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believes in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever lives and believes in me shall never die.
You are created to know God. Find out how to begin a relationship with him by going to knowgod.org. Already know God? Invite a friend or family member to learn more about what it means to follow Jesus Christ. Answers to questions about the Christian faith, instructions for growing in your relationship with the Lord, and video messages from Pastor Greg Laurie can all be found at knowgod.org.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. France's president is urging unity in his nation as it hunts gunmen who killed 12 people, including two police officers, at the office of a satirical newspaper in Paris earlier today. Speaking on national TV about the shooting victims, President François Hollande said, "They are today our heroes." President Obama offering U.S. help in pursuing the gunmen who carried out that attack. He says that they had attacked freedom of expression. A coroner's inquest has found that a Montana police officer was justified in shooting and killing an unarmed man during a traffic stop. A rally on Wall Street today lifted stocks. The Dow is up about 212 points, closing at 17,584. NASDAQ ended 57 points higher, and the S&P rose 23. More details at srnnews.com.
How do you respond to our conversation today? We're talking with Donna Stafford about her, a mistake that she made, and how afraid she was to get up the next day and to do this again, to do this introduction. That, yeah, it's kind of a small thing, but it's big at the time. I'm going to tell you another story, how I react to this, and then I want to hear from you, 877-548-3675. A few months ago, my wife and I and our children and the dog moved into this new home, new to us. And it's on a little bit of land, about an acre, and there are no covenants. There are no people saying you can't put a flag up and you can't have a chicken in the backyard if you don't want to. And so we are making our plans. And the first thing that my wife wanted to do, that I wholeheartedly supported, was to put in a laundry thing outside. A laundry line, and she bought this metal pole that you sink into the ground, and at the top it opens up kind of like an umbrella, but there are these individual lines where you hang your clothes in the bright Arizona sunshine all year round, and it's just a wonderful thing. You don't have to use all that electricity, and the clothes smell like they have been outside and air dried, and they're fluffy and gorgeous. Well, that thing sat in the box after we moved in, and I looked at it, and I looked at the backyard, and I had this fear that I was going to put it in the wrong place because you have to put cement down. I had this fear that I was going to do the cement thing wrong. See, I'm not a handyman. I'm not that kind of guy. I can change the oil in the car if I really have to, and I can change the tire, but it's not my bent. But I did not want to hire somebody else to do this. I can do this. All it's a pole you put in the ground. Come on. What's wrong with you? See, it's not only fear, but it's shame. I mix shame into my life. So I told my wife, I'm going to do that. And the weekend came and I didn't do it because I got involved with something else. But it wasn't really that I had something else on the schedule. I was afraid. I was working this thing out in my head. How am I going to put this thing in the ground and make sure that it is straight? I don't want to look out our back door and look at a clothesline, a laundry pole thing that is the leaning tower of laundry. I want it to be straight. I want it. But how do you do that? How do you, with the shifting earth and the way that things. So I read the directions, of course, and it's easy. You know, it's just like the directions you get from people. So, oh, just go to, you can't miss it. And you know that you're going to. So I mixed the concrete. I did that in my own way. I looked on YouTube and here's how you do it in the ground. I dug the hole first and I made sure it was deep enough and it was away from the house far enough that the sun was, it wouldn't be, you know, all of those things that went through my mind. But still there was this angst. What if I get it in there and what if it's crooked? And so mix the concrete, put the pole down there. You don't want to put the top pole on it because it's definitely going to lean. And I got the level out and the small level and the big level and the concrete, you know, making sure that's flat and this. And it's like, what more can I do? And I stood back from my creation and it was a little bit, and I just touched it up just a little bit. And this is the fast drying stuff. So, if you know, you get what you get. And the ground is so hard. It just so hard to get this hole that's dug in there. Because you don't want a great big hole. You got to dig like a post hole. But there's no... Anyway. So I get it. The next day I wake up, look out the window. Guess what I see? I see the Leaning Tower of Laundry. It is... It's not bad. It's not like, you know, halfway bent over. But it's just enough that for somebody who walks by a picture frame and, you know, has to tip it up, it's like that. It's like every day I look at that and I think it's leaning a little bit. But you know what my wife said after I'll open the lines and let you guess, but I don't have to. You know what she said? That's great. It looks great. I said, but it's leaning. So yeah. Well, it's leaning, though. I'm always going to look at this and think it's leaning. And that right there is the lesson for me. As I look at this, if I want to do something that is perfect, forget it. Don't do it. If I want to do a radio program that is perfect, something's going to happen. Somebody's phone line's going to go haywire. I'm going to say something dumb that I didn't really mean that somebody's going to call me. It's going to happen. Do it anyway. Put in the clothesline, put the thing in the ground, mix the concrete, put it in there. If it's leaning a little bit, well, it's really bad. You know, you could do it over again, I guess. What's the worst that can happen? You have to get another one, put matching ones. I was thinking about putting another one in there so I could have an antenna so I can see the TV. Eleanor Roosevelt said, you must do the thing that you think you cannot do. I think that's so true. You must do the thing you think you cannot do. And sometimes that is such a small thing. Sometimes you just need to make the mistake. Sometimes you need to let the mistake happen. What is the fear in your life? What have you gotten over? How have you responded to some kind of a mistake that you have made? Maybe you put the same thing in, or you tried to fix the car, or save a little bit of money, and it wound up not working so well for you. What's the lesson you get out of that? Cheryl is in Lakeland, Florida. Cheryl, thanks for calling. How did you react to our conversation?
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call. I always enjoy listening to your show. Well, my story about fear really was due to a traumatic event that happened at one time in my life. I was pregnant with my second child. And I was due to have her that weekend. It was Labor Day weekend, which was kind of funny. I was due on Labor Day. And I had been having false labor. And then that night went to bed. And as most pregnant women do, I had to get up and go to the bathroom a lot. And we had a waterbed at the time. And so I actually slept in my daughter's room that night on her firm bed because she was spending the night with my parents. Well, I get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and when I come back, the front window of the house and her room was just orange. There was just this glow, and I just heard this popping and crackling, and I'm thinking, what in the world? And I look outside, and across the street, my elderly neighbor's house was completely, looked like, engulfed in flames. And I just yelled to my husband, called 911, or no, I just yelled to him, and I went and called 911, and he took off running across the street, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning. No one knew this was happening. He was able to run to the back of the house, and fortunately, they kept their door unlocked, and he was able to kind of get in enough for them. Their electricity was already out, and the smoke was very heavy, and they were trying to find their way out. Wow. And I just, you know, I mean, I was so thankful that God used us there for them. They ended up being okay, had to go to the hospital for, you know, just oxygen and stuff like that. But then that day, the investigators were there, and they were thinking that it could have been arson, just a random arson. And then also the house was old, and they were, you know, questioning whether it was something electrical or, you know. So all of those things just really made me start questioning, wow, what if that had been us? What if that had been our house? You know, oh, gosh, our house is old. It could catch fire easy. You know, it was like I just opened a door there, and then the next night I couldn't sleep. I was up all night long because I was just – scared to death. I was sleeping on the couch. I was really paranoid. And the next morning, my water broke, went to the hospital after having no sleep all night. And when we're in the hospital and I'm in labor, the fire alarm goes off in the hospital. And the nurse just sits there, and I'm like, what is that? And she's like, oh, it's just a fire alarm. I'm like, don't you think you need to go check? Because, you know, and I just briefly told her what happened. Well, you know, when I got out of the hospital and came home and I looked across the street at their house that had just been burnt down, I mean, it just really sent me, and I don't know if it was my hormones on top of everything at the time, but mm-hmm. Satan just really used that time to just start attacking my mind with all kinds of thoughts that were making me. I had been a believer for 9 years, but I had never experienced anything like that. It made me question many, many things. It made me very fearful. I started having panic attacks. I couldn't be alone. I would go to the store, and I would just, in the middle of the store, start having a panic attack and just feel like I was just going to drop dead right there. And then, you know, he would play on my mind. And I'm telling you, for like 6 months, it was an extreme battle. My mom, who was an awesome prayer warrior and very, she had studied up on spiritual warfare and just, you know, was really there for me. I actually stayed with her some, and she helped me with my girls. And through, like, every time we go to church, it was like the message would be about fear. You know, if I turn on the radio, the message would be about fear. If I turn on the TV, you know, there would be a message on about fear. People would put books in my hand. And it's like God was so speaking to me and, you know, trying to show me that I had to put my trust, even for my life, in him. I had trusted him with my salvation.
Yes.
But it was like all of a sudden I'm faced with this, anything could happen. And my girls, they wouldn't have their mother, you know. And it was just a very horrible, horrible time in my life. But God really used Joyce Meyer's book, Battlefield of the Mind, at the time.
You know what I wrote down? When you were talking, what I wrote down here was, what is the opposite of fear? And I think most of us would say, the opposite of fear is blank. What do you think? The opposite of fear is courage, something like that, right? The opposite of fear is running in there instead of being held back. But I think for the believer, the opposite of fear is not courage as much as it is. I think courage is a byproduct of trust. Because when you submit when you relinquish your own rights and your own ability and all of that into something greater than you, and you trust in that rather than yourself and being able to work everything out, then you are given courage from God above to do whatever it is that you need to do. Cheryl, that's a great way to start us out here. I've got some wonderful stories of people. Can I take Thomas's call real quick before we go to a break? Cheryl, God bless you. Thomas, you are a contractor, and you install tile. Is that right?
Well, I do a lot of different things. Actually, now I mostly work on broadcast. I make it possible for you to have your radio show going on.
You don't climb the tower, do you?
Well, that's the best part.
You could not get me up on top of that thing if you... Oh, I respect.
I got caught parachuting off the grain silos with my best friend in homemade parachutes when I was 8.
I believe it.
The only thing my mom was frustrated about was I used her new fitted sheets to make the parachutes.
you're my kind of guy, Thomas. I'd watch you. I'd pay money to watch you. Let me take a break. I'm going to come back because you say that when you install those tiles, having one crooked tile, it just drives you crazy. Because you want to get everything right. I want to get his perspective on that and your call, perhaps, about fear, where it might lead you. 877-548-3675. This is Chris Fabry live on Moody Radio.
Welcome to Bible Q&A with John MacArthur, author of the MacArthur New Testament Commentary Series. Well, all Christians affirm the crucifixion and the resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ. Those are two events that are central to our Christian faith. But what many are unsure of, and often debate, is what happened to Jesus between the crucifixion and resurrection. John, where did Jesus go?
Well, that's a good question, and we have a direct answer. 1 Peter 3:19 says that he descended into the place of bound demons. And according to the book of Colossians, he declared his triumph over them. This is fascinating. Jesus gave up his life on the cross. That would be Friday. He rose from the dead on Sunday. And where is he in between? Well, one of the places we know he went was right into the party, right into the celebration going on in the pit where the demons are bound until they're finally thrown in the ultimate lake of fire. I guess you could put it this way. While they were having a great celebration that the Son of God was dead, he showed up and he declared his triumph over them. And then, of course, he came out of the grave alive and 40 days later ascended into heaven. The Bible is very, very clear that our Lord in his death, and Colossians talks about this, demonstrated his power over Satan and over all the forces of the demons. And he did that by a personal appearance right in their presence.
Thanks for listening to Bible Q&A with John MacArthur. For more information about John's New Testament commentaries, visit MacArthurCommentaries.com.
Someone on Facebook says the fear of the future is worse than what actually happens most of the time. It's what we are afraid of. I had a friend on Facebook not long ago talk about how afraid she was of the biscuit can, you know, the can of biscuits, and you unwrap it and then it pops. She's just so afraid of the pop. She didn't. Some of the fears that we have are irrational. Some of the things like this just drive you crazy. And that's what Thomas is talking about his tile. So when you lay this tile down, that is an art form, and you, if one of them's off, it really bugs you, doesn't it?
Oh, it makes me crazy. I can't walk into an office without correcting, repositioning the pictures on the wall.
Right.
If they're off a little bit. I was busting up listening to you talk about your backyard pole that was crooked. I closely resemble that remark.
Well, you know what I found? I found it's better to go upstairs and look down on it because then I don't notice as much.
Well, the first, I didn't become a contractor because I wanted to be a contractor. I was buying real estate for rental properties and couldn't find good people, so I started learning how to do this stuff myself. And the first time I actually did a tile job by myself, I got finished and realized that I had one of the tiles, I had the pattern turned around backwards. And it was like, it was so frustrating. I chipped it all out. I mean, it took forever. I had to cut it out, chip it up, do it all over. And the next time I did a tile job, I did the same thing. After the third time, I said, you know what? This is ridiculous. It became, I decided, okay, rather than worrying about it, it just became a signature. So I would automatically set a tile backwards when I would start, try to put it in an inconspicuous, you know, someplace it would be under the sofa or something like that. So they would, anyways, so just, you'd be amazed how much easier it makes to go because you don't think, you don't worry about it after that.
Yes. Well,
otherwise,
and you're relaxed
about it. I would go the
whole
job sweating about okay, I'm going to screw this up.
Right.
Where am I going to mess it up? It's going to be in the middle of the kitchen floor.
Well, and a lot of people, you know what, Thomas, a lot of people look at parenting that way too, and they say, I'm not going to have kids because I'm not going to inflict them with, you know, all of my problems, and I know I'm not going to make a, you know what, you will, you're going to make mistakes as a parent, but don't be afraid to jump into the fray. I think this happens with a lot of men. A lot of dads don't want to engage because they're afraid of talking with their kids or talking with their spouse and saying the wrong thing, so you hold back and you're quiet, and both things have problems with them. You get in the game. You got to get in there. Even if the pole at the end of the day is a little bit crooked or the tile is turned around backwards, which Thomas, I walk into that room and say, this is Thomas's room. I like that. Patricia is in Idaho. Patricia, how do you respond to the topic today?
Well, I was afraid you wouldn't, I wouldn't get through to you. And then I was afraid if I got through to you.
That I'd come to you and here you are.
Yeah, okay. I'm a former 50-year Alaskan, but I live in Idaho now. And I'm a great-grandmother, so you can see I'm up there. In 1969-70, I was living in Sitka, and I had five children at that point. And I know Satan brings fear to us, and the three fears I had was that I would have cancer, that I would be divorced, that my husband would leave me, and that I would lose the child. Mm. And we moved from there to Kodiak, which I love all my little Alaskan cities, and then to Anchorage. And in Anchorage, I found out I had cancer. And in one day after my doctor discovered that, I was operated and had a mastectomy. And through God's help, I did wonderfully well. 5 months later, my husband did leave me, and a year later, well, he came back, and that following May of 78, I was in the hospital for another operation. My doctor came to my room and told me, my son Kirk, excuse me for getting emotional, had been murdered in Fort Benning, Georgia, which became a 33-year job of mine to try to find out who killed him. But I think, I know it was God's help that brought me through this, because I was a mess for a while. But I was a Christian, and I had some wonderful friends who were praying for me. One of the things probably that helped bring me out of the depression was trying to find, along with this CID who did all the work, who killed my son. It was a 33-year job, as I mentioned. And today I'm helping with Celebrate Recovery at my church as a codependent. I'm certainly codependent.
But I've come a long way. Close the loop on that. Did they finally find the murderer of your son?
Yes, and I had some wonderful CID agents and FBI, but my beloved, I have two agents in the CID that went far beyond the call of duty. There was DNA in 1978, but it was so new that it got botched. And I found this person caused the death of another person. And that's how in the trial, the CID found out they were called, and he had told two wives that he had killed my son.
Wow!
And
hang on just a second, Patricia. I want to talk with you off the air. We're at the end of the program, but the stories continue, as you can hear, and the fears will come up, and the fears will continue as well. But I don't think God wants you to live in that fear. Whatever it is, it's an opportunity for you to trust Him. That's where we're going to leave you today. Tomorrow, Tony Evans on Chris Fabry Live, a production of Moody Radio in Chicago.
Are you merely living life, or is yours a life on mission? There's a huge difference, you know. One life merely fills time, while the other invests it. Dustin Willis and Aaron Coe invite you to step up and step out. In their book, Life on Mission, they give you tons of practical tips for doing whatever you do with a true kingdom pursuit. Whether you're a student, electrician, lawyer, homemaker, or church planter, you need the encouragement of this book. Life on Mission is a simple guide for everyday missionaries, us. The book is threaded with engaging stories and powerful questions that help you take the next step in living life on mission. Join the movement at lifeonmissionbook.com. That's lifeonmissionbook.com. Pick up a copy of Life on Mission. It's available right now at your favorite local or online bookstore. From Moody Publishers, the name you can trust.